So when we look at Bhagavad Gita, then we can see that basically the goal of Bhagavad Gita is to awaken surrender. In Sanskrit, there are different words for surrender. Atmanivedanam, Atmanikshepa, Atmasamarpanam. These are all different words which entail surrender. Surrender is the goal of life. Because Krishna only gives us one thing that He will never take away from us. And the only one thing that Krishna gives, everything else, Krishna is Hari, everything else He takes away. But the only one thing He doesn't take away is our free will. Our own volition is our own Ichcha. Therefore, even at the end of Gita, Krishna says to Arjuna, Yata Ichcha Tatha Kuru. Then what is your desire that you do? Whatever you want to do by your own free will. So the one thing that Krishna never takes away from us is our free will. So when the only one thing that we possess, we then invest that back in Krishna. In Christian tradition, they say, Thy will be done. Isn't it something like that, right? Yeah. Let Thy will be done, or something like that. Is it, David?
Yes,
definitely. Yes, so so that's the idea, that this is very, very special, that when we surrender, and I'm going to come to the topic of the dhams, but what I'm going to share with you actually is that there's one way to look at surrender in the Bhagavad Gita, and there's many ways you can look at it, but one way is that surrender in the Bhagavad Gita is shown on three different levels by three different verses in the Gita. What do you think the first point in the Gita where we find surrender is? Anyone have an idea? Oh, yeah.
He accepts Krishna as his guru.
Yeah, right. So that's the first kind of surrender that happens in the Gita. We see here in 2.7, Arjuna says, Shishyasteham sadimam tvam prapannam. So this prapannam or prapati, this indicates surrender. So the first level of surrender is when we surrender to guidance. There's no other, you can't begin the journey of surrender to Krishna without first beginning with the step of surrender to guidance. Therefore, one English writer, he says, we should know what to do when we don't know what to do. We should know what to do when we don't know what to do. And what do you do when you don't know what to do? You go to someone who can tell you what to do. So the first step, and Prabhupada makes that point in the purport, he says, by nature's own way, the complete system of material activities is a source of perplexity for everyone. In every step, there is perplexity. And therefore it behooves one to approach a bona fide spiritual master who can give one proper guidance for executing the purpose of life. So the first surrender is surrender to guidance. And how does guidance appear in our life? In the form of Guru Sadhu Shastra. If you want to know whether your life is going in a good direction, whether your life will be going in a good direction, you just have to ask yourself, how much is my life being led by guidance? And how much is my life being led by the mind? Or by attachments? Or by material desires? Or by my own ideas or conceptions? According to how you answer this question, you don't need to be an astrologer. You can already predict what's going to happen in the future. Because Krishna says, Yasastra vidimutsrijya vartate kama karata. If you act without reference to Guru Sadhu Shastra, vartate kama karata, or by your own volition, then nasa siddhim avapnoti, you will not attain the perfection you desire, na param gatim, you won't attain the destination. So one's connection with Guru Sadhu Shastra is very, very important. This is what is driving the journey. Therefore, we're taking so much time to develop relationship with Guru. relationship with Srila Prabhupada and Vaishnavas, relationship with the Shastra, because this is the first step in the process of surrender, first surrender to guidance. Then we can say the next point at which you find another kind of point of surrender that Krishna makes. Can anyone think of the next verse? You can see roughly where I am in the Gita. You can make a guess. Where do you think that is? Where Krishna talks about surrendering. Yeah, David?
Approaching a spiritual master.
So that one we got. Because that's 2.7.
You mean
4.34. Yeah, so that's kind of contained within this one. Surrender to guidance. But then Krishna goes a little further. He talks about if you want to overcome something, then you have to surrender. Yeah.
2.59.
It's roughly there, you can see. It's roughly right. Chapter 7. Yeah, right. So Krishna says in 7.14, Devi hiya shugunamayi mama maya durateya mam eva ye prapadyante. So this verse word comes again. First it comes in 2.7, prapannam, and again it's now coming in 7.14. Krishna says, this world, this divine energy of mine, this ocean of the material world is very difficult to overcome. But one who has surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. So here, the surrender that's being talked about is surrender to the process of Krishna consciousness. So the first step in the journey of surrender is you surrender to guidance. Then the second step in the journey of surrender is you surrender to the process. Because if you surrender to the process of Krishna consciousness, the Abhideya, the Nava Anga Bhakti, the Panchavida Bhakti, then what happens is that you get the spiritual strength to cross beyond this world. You get the spiritual strength to deal with all of the different waves of material nature, all of the miseries, all of the different obstacles and temptations and deviations. All of those things become like Arurena Krichena Padam Padam, like water in a calf's hoof print. The ocean of the material world, which is so vast, becomes like the water in a calf's hoof print, and one can easily cross beyond because they've taken shelter of the process of devotional service. So therefore they say the safest place in the world to be is in the middle of a kirtan. And that's symbolic. It means that whenever you're true to the process, when you stay chaste to the practices of Krishna consciousness, then you're protected. Just like in the Ramayana, of course it's not in Valmiki's, but in the other Ramayana, there's that concept of the Lakshman Rekha. That when Lakshman was going to help Ram, and Sita was left there, then what did he do? He drew a line around her and he said, as long as you don't go outside of this line, you will be okay. But the moment you transgress that, then danger will come. And then what happened? Eventually she was lured beyond that line, and then she was captured by Ravan, who represents Kaam. So lust is there, the all-devouring enemy. But if you stay surrendered to the process, then you can cross beyond all of that and you can reach. So there then you see the second aspect of surrender. Surrender to the process of Krishna consciousness. But then the ultimate point of surrender is not just to surrender to guidance, is not just to surrender to a process of Krishna consciousness, but to ultimately surrender to who?
Krishna.
Therefore, then we find in 1866, Sarva Dharman Parityaja Mamekam Saranam Raja. So here the word for surrender is Sharanam. This is like the third major step in surrender that's given. That ultimately, after surrendering to the process, The process is not just meant to carry us across the material ocean of the material world. That almost becomes like an incidental factor. For a devotee, ultimately, whether they're in the material world, once they're surrendered to Krishna, it doesn't matter. Therefore, Bhagavatam says, Narayana para sarve na kutashchana bhibhyati. Svarga, they can be in Svarga. Apavarga, they can be in this material world. Naraka, they can be in Narak. Apitulyartha darshina, they see everything as the same. They don't fear any situation of life because they're connected to Krishna. So the ultimate point of surrender is to surrender to Krishna, to surrender to Krishna's will, to ultimately be surrendered to whatever Krishna wants you to do. And that only comes when one has genuine first realization that Krishna exists. You can't surrender to Krishna unless you have realization that Krishna exists. But not just realization that Krishna exists, you also have to have realization of Krishna's love for you. And when you have realization of Krishna's love for you, then you develop your own love for Krishna that is going on. And therefore, love and surrender go hand in hand. You can't surrender to someone you don't love. And so while we don't have that love, raga hina jane bhaje shastrira agyai. If you don't raga hina, if you don't have rag, then your spiritual life has to be guided by guru sadhu shastra and a process. Therefore, in the beginning, surrender is to guidance and surrender is to a process. But once through that guidance and process one develops rag, then one can just surrender unto Krishna. And then one is just ready to move with Krishna's will. And therefore, what is the word in here, in this second line of the verse? Mamekam saranam vraja. And the double meaning of the acharyas that they give to this verse is that vraja here means to go. But it also means Vrindavan. That one should go to Vrindavan. Why should one go to Vrindavan? Because Vrindavan is also known as Vraja. And why is Vraja so special? Because Vraja is basically the place which is inhabited by people who have surrendered to Krishna. What does the word Vraja mean? Here in the word for word it says go. The other meaning of the word Vraja is to walk. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says that why are Vrajavasis called Vrajavasis? Because they are always walking with Krishna. They are always moving with Krishna's will. They are always surrendered to Krishna in mind and heart. And that's why Vrindavan is so special. Because Vrindavan is the place of surrender. Not just surrender to guidance, not just surrender to a process, but surrender to Krishna out of love. That's real spiritual life. Before that, it's not really spiritual life. It's more like religious life. Therefore, eventually Krishna says, give up religion. Give up this external type of surrender. External surrender is good in the beginning, but it's not our goal. So Krishna eventually says, give up the external surrender and just surrender to me. In other words, develop internal surrender, surrender to Krishna's will. And so that is why Vrindavan is very, very special, because Vrindavan is a place which is inspiring surrender in the heart. We can go our whole spiritual life and not really become surrendered in the deepest sense by surrendering our free will to Krishna. But when we go to Vrindavan, when we hear from the devotees in Vrindavan, when we remember the example of the Vrajavasis, when we become purified by the mercy that's available in the Dham, by all of these things, we become qualified then to surrender on a deeper level. And that, we can say in a philosophical way, is why Vrindavan is so special. Vrindavan, Jiva Goswami says, it's not a place, it's not just a geographical place. Vrindavan is a state of consciousness. And so, ultimately, it's said that our cherished destination is Goloka Vrindavan, but Goloka Vrindavan manifests in the world as Brahma Vrindavan. And by going to Brahma Vrindavan, then one can develop Vrindavan within their own consciousness. And so that Vrindavan consciousness is surrender to Krishna on the deepest level. And in this way, Krishna takes us on a journey through the Bhagavad Gita, through Arjuna, showing how in the beginning, Arjuna is just surrendering to guidance. But then later on, he's teaching Arjuna, you have to surrender to my instructions, to my process. But then later on, Krishna is telling Arjuna, just surrender to me. Just surrender to my will. And if you get to that point, then you've completed the full journey of the Bhagavad Gita and you're qualified to enter into Vrindavan. So these are just some preliminary words on Vrindavan, looking at it from a different angle. And yeah, if you have any questions or comments or anything you would like to ask on this or about Vrindavan, then we can have a little bit of a discussion. Anyone want to ask anything? Yeah.
Is there any noticeable significant difference in the meaning of the word Sharanamani?
Is there any difference or in the meaning of those words? No, I've not seen anything written like that. I guess every word carries its own, you know, like different words are there in different contexts. So sometimes a certain Sanskrit word is more relevant for that context. But no, ultimately these words mean all the same thing. Even like I mentioned in the beginning that there's different words for surrender. So Atmanivedan, Atmanikshepa, Atma Samarpan. You know, like Atma, for example, Atma Nikshepa. Nikshepa means literally to fall. So it literally means that you just fall before the Lord. Like it's indicating a deep type of humility. So it's surrender which is based in a deep type of humility. That's the kind of focus of that meaning of the word surrender. For example, if you have the word Atma Samarpan, Arpan means to offer something. Like for example, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, Manasa Deho Geho Jo Kishumor Arpila Tue Pade Nanda Kishor. So Samarpan means to offer everything. So that's also surrender. Surrender means you offer everything to Krishna, whatever you have, whatever's in your. So can you see, like, both mean surrender, but both are incorporating a different element of surrender and mood of surrender. In Atma Samarpan, we're remembering that surrender means to offer everything to Krishna. In Atma Nikshepa, we're remembering that surrender means that I don't rely on my own abilities or feel that I am in control, but understand that Krishna loves me and He's in control, and let me humble myself before Krishna and go with His plan. So yeah, like that. Every different word of surrender carries a different aspect and a different aspect of the mood of surrender. And so, yeah, like that.
What was the verse in chapter 7?
7:14. Yeah. So we can say these are three kind of steps. 2:7 is like surrender to guidance. Yeah. 7:14 is like surrender to the process, and 18:66 is like surrender to the person.
Yeah. Maharaj, you used a term, you said mood. So when it comes to surrender, our guru or our spiritual master, we should have humility. As per 1813, so what type of mood should we have while surrendering to Krishna? 1866.
So you're saying 18-13 is the mood of surrendering to Guru?
Like humility. There are like 20 characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
8-13.
Okay, let's read the verse that you're referring to. Are you sure it's
8-13?
13-8. 13-8, you mean? 13-8. Yeah. Amanitvam, adambitvam, all these things, yeah? Okay, yeah, right. So what's the difference between surrender to Guru and surrender to Krishna?
Krishna, more. Yeah. What type of more should we have while surrendering Krishna?
Yeah. So in the beginning, you see, I don't think you can separate surrender to Guru and surrender to Krishna in that way. In the beginning, we're understanding that, like Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Shiksha Guru Ke Tajani Krishna Swarup Krishna Bhakta Shreshta Antaryami E Dui Rup, that Krishna is manifesting in this world in two ways. One is the Antaryami, and internally as the Paramatma, and Krishna is manifesting externally as the Guru. So Krishna Bhakta Shreshta E Dui Rup, these are the two rupes or the forms of Krishna. So the same way in which we're approaching the Guru, first in the mood of, Krishna explains the mood. More than 13.8, the mood of surrender to the Guru is given in 4.34. So there we say, Pranipat, Sevaya and Pariprashna. So what is the mood of surrender to the Guru? That one is first very humble, and then one is asking relevant things, learning, and then one is also rendering service. So these are the components of surrender to the Guru. Now surrender to Krishna, see, when you surrender to Guru in the beginning, the Guru, you see, the way you can see the Guru is in three ways. A Guru is a representative, a Guru is an instructor, and then ultimately you see the Guru as the friend. So in the beginning you're seeing the Guru in a very awe and reverence way that, you know, I learn from him, I render service to him. He's connected me to the parampara. So in that way we see him as the representative of the parampara. Later on the relationship with the Guru becomes more personal because he instructs you. And then there's more personal relationship. And then later on, when it gets even deeper with the Guru, you realize, Guru Sudrida Saurida, the Guru is my best friend. So, our relationship with the Guru goes through these. And in the beginning, it must begin with humility, because the Guru is a representative and then we're going on that journey. Then, in the same way, you can say your relationship with Krishna in the same way is like that. In the beginning, we're relating to Krishna in a very humble way. When we're worshipping the deities, we're worshipping them in what? Awe and reverence. We're not seeing them in one sense as Radha and Krishna. We are seeing them as Radha and Krishna, but we're worshipping the mood of Lakshmi Narayan in awe and reverence. And then later on what happens is that one's relationship with Krishna becomes more personal. One begins to communicate with Krishna and receive that communication from Krishna. And then ultimately one realizes, yes, Krishna says, Suridam Sarva Bhutanam, I'm the best friend of everyone. And then the relationship with Krishna is much more intimate. So just like the relationship and the surrender to the Guru begins with awe and reverence and then becomes very personal, because the Guru is connecting us with Krishna, that relationship with Krishna also goes on in that same way. So therefore, you know, it's a journey. And you can see even that journey of surrender begins like that, very formal. You surrender to guidance, to a process, but then to a person. Yeah.
So at the beginning you mentioned that the only thing that Krishna leaves up to us is free will. And shortly after you mentioned, may thy will be done, that Krishna can do anything that he wants with me. So how do we find the balance between, you know, in thought when we are trying to figure out what choice to make, you know, because we are sort of giving an energy from our side in this relationship with Krishna. With free will, we have the role to give some energy, and also Krishna has the role to give his energy. So how do we, for instance, in context, say, you know, trying to choose an optimal ashram for you to fit in, whether Brahmachari ashram or Grihastha ashram, you know, maybe I may have a desire that Brahmachari ashram is what I'd like to stick with, but at the same time I'm trying to surrender to Krishna, to his, you know, ultimate will, just do anything with me. But that way then a fear arises that what if Krishna actually takes me to the Grihastha ashram, from where I stand, you know, there's a sort of a fear, you know, some may fear Krishna, you know, making them stay in the Brahmachari ashram, some may fear Krishna taking them to the Grihastha ashram. So how do we so that we may not be in confusion, you know, how do we find that balance between actually knowing that this is what I will stick with and I will go with it, this is my desire, this is what I will do, and, you know, letting Krishna also, you know, do whatever he wants.
Yeah, so it's not one or the other. It's not that one option is I follow my desires and the other option is that I follow Krishna's desires. Actually, what we're doing in spiritual life is Krishna respects you as a soul. Krishna respects you as an individual. And Krishna is happy to hear your desires. He's happy to hear your plans. But what Krishna wants you to do is submit your desires, submit your plans before him, submit your ideas. And then your part then is, once you put everything on the table, to then learn to hear Krishna. Because Krishna says, Majjita sarva durgani mat prasada tarisyasi atachetvam ahankara nasrosyasi vinamshasi. Krishna says, if you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. But if you act not hearing me, acting through the ego, then you will be lost. So it's not that you can't have a plan. It's not that you can't have a desire. It's not that you can't have vision of what you want your life to be and how you want it to be. But you have to, within those plans, have flexibility. That if Krishna shows something else, if Krishna indicates something else, if Krishna desires something else, then like the Brajabasis, you have to be ready to walk with Krishna. You have to have that flexibility. So that's the difference between plans and expectations. Plans are wonderful. Expectations are frustrating. Therefore, the moment your plans become expectations, then you're going to lead a very frustrated life. But if you keep your plans as plans and be ready to put it before Krishna and be ready to change if Krishna wants to change, then even if Krishna changes your plans, you'll be okay. So the basic point is, have a plan, have a desire, have a vision. Put it in front of Krishna and then hear Krishna. And how do you hear Krishna? That you have to become expert. You have to hear through Guru Sadhu Shastra. You have to hear the voice of Krishna guiding you. And if the voice of Krishna is telling you something very different to your plans, then you have to be ready, Vraja, to walk with Krishna's plan. That's surrender. And if you do that, Krishna says, Majjita sarva durgani, all the obstacles of conditioned life you'll overcome.
And how are you able to keep this consciousness, as you've explained it, when it's part of the shastras, part of what we hear, we shouldn't have material desire, we should be free from material designations. How do we keep this consciousness? Because, you know, for instance, back to my reference about these ashrams, these are basically designations that have brahmacharya and all this. How are you able to keep these designations while not keeping them?
The only is a designation is only an upadhi if you are identifying with that thing for a material purpose. If you're thinking, I want to remain brahmachari because I'll get more respect, I'll get more, you know, I'll have less responsibility, it will be an easier life, that's an upadhi. If you want to stay brahmachari because you're thinking, I'll be able to do more service for Krishna, I'll be able to dedicate the best of myself in the mission of Srila Prabhupada in this way, then it's not an upadhi. Because the basis of that is service. When the basis of something is not service, then it's an upadhi. But when the basis of something is service, then it's not an upadhi. So sometimes we use these things. It's like it's interesting. In the Bhagavad Gita, the first thing Krishna tells Arjuna is, you're not the body. All these relationships are temporary, all this stuff. And then Krishna wants to inspire Arjuna to fight, and he's saying, oh Bharata, oh best of the Bharatas. He's bringing up a designation. But Krishna, you just said I'm not the body. And now you're telling me, like trying to incite me, the best of the Bharatas. But in that sense, Krishna is bringing up his family lineage, because he's saying that reminding you of that can help you to serve. So it's not a material designation anymore. If reminding you that you're in the dynasty of Bharata, that you're the son of Pritha, that you have all these amazing blessings with you, if that inspires you to serve, then it's no longer a material designation. So if you want to stay brahmachari, then have a desire for the right reasons to want to remain in the ashram. And do everything on your part, and then hear Krishna. And if Krishna's wish is something different, you have to move with that. Does that help? Yeah.
So I've heard that in Vrindavan, sometimes we see beggars and people that are very much interested in money. So I was just wondering, what is their position and how we should deal with them appropriately.
Yeah, so Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, when you see someone, you should try to give something, otherwise you'll become very hard-hearted. So if you can, you carry something with you, you give them some prasad or something, if you can give. Otherwise, yeah, what to do? You have to be practical as well. So, but you should remember, they are Brijavasis, they are special. They are, we're looking at them thinking they are unfortunate, or we may have our own conceptions. No one living in Vrindavan is ordinary. So treat everyone with great respect. Serve them in whatever capacity you can serve them. And otherwise, you have to get on with your business, which is there. Which is to go deeper in your own Krishna consciousness. So yeah, just be practical like that. Be very respectful and try to serve. That's the essence of it.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, how was your first experience in Vrindavan? And what
did you do differently, but at the same time, what did you do that was correct when entering Vrindavan? The first time I went Vrindavan was with Radhanath Maharaj on the Parikrama in Kartik. That wasn't easy. Good, blissful in many ways. Austere in many ways. You see, in Vrindavan you come face to face Vrindavan, the Dham, is like a mirror. So in the Dham, you come face to face with your own consciousness. You come face to face with your own lack of Krishna consciousness. You come face to face with your lack of substance. You come face to face with your attachments. Sometimes you're in Vrindavan and you're in the middle of the most spiritual place in the entire universe, surrounded by all spiritual wealth, and you just feel very normal. You feel very mundane. And you're thinking, what's wrong with me? I'm in the most surcharged place in the universe. I don't feel so Krishna conscious. So the first thing to realize is when you go to Vrindavan, it's not necessarily that every day is magical. It's not necessarily that every day you're bursting with realizations. It's not that every day is ecstatic. There are many days of struggle. Vrindavan is also known as Tapabhumi, place of austerity. It's also Madhurya Dham, sweet, the place of sweetness. So how can it be simultaneously the place of austerity and the place of sweetness? Because for the sadhaka, Vrindavan is a place of purification in the beginning. And for the siddha, they are experiencing the realization of Vrindavan, the sweetness. So we get glimpses of both. So you just have to stay calm in Vrindavan.
Keep
calm. That t-shirt. Keep calm in Vrindavan. Yeah, and main thing is don't space out in Vrindavan. That's the main thing. It's the biggest problem devotees have. They go dham and then they space out. Shoot the breeze, hang out with friends, you know. Just like, maybe not in a grossly deviant way, but just waste time. Don't waste time. Just be very focused. You're not in the Dham for many days, so just pack your day with different things. And if you can't sit and read for so many hours in a day, then just keep moving and doing different things, but be engaged. Sit in the kirtan, come back, make a schedule, don't waste time. The worst thing you can do in Vrindavan is waste time. Because the idle mind is a devil's workshop. So just stay engaged, and the best way to do it is stay with someone who's very focused. And just work off the energy. And I think if you do that, then Vrindavan, you will not see Vrindavan in one visit. It's the beginning. So you go Vrindavan for the first time and you realize it's just the beginning. And Krishna will give me some vision of himself here. And then I'll go away. And then I'll do service. And then I'll come back. See, after I went Vrindavan for the first time, then I never went back to Vrindavan for 8 years. Because I felt, I haven't done enough. Every year I thought, shall I go? I thought, no, I haven't done enough. What will I see in Vrindavan? I haven't done enough service. So for 8 years I didn't go back to Vrindavan. And then when I went after that, I felt that, yes, now I come to Vrindavan with some mercy. You can go to Vrindavan, but if you don't carry mercy to Vrindavan, you have no currency. You have no currency to see anything there. So, yeah, you carry some mercy from the sacrifices, from the service that you've done. And according to that, you'll get a vision of Vrindavan. And then you'll come back and you'll remember the beauty of Vrindavan. And you'll do more service. And then you'll go again. And then you'll see more. So gradually the Dham is becoming uncovered. The Dham is revealing itself to us in proportion to our surrender. So, yeah, it's beautiful. So don't see your connection with Vrindavan as a one-off experience. See your connection with Vrindavan as an ongoing relationship that you're developing. Want to say something?
Yeah, I was saying that that book you got on Vrindavan, Saints of Vrata, you got it from Vrindavan or was it somewhere else?
It's here, that's written by O.B.L. Kapoor.
Yeah, that's one of the reading, that's why I'm asking. Is it a good book to go through, like if you're in Vrindavan?
Saints of Raja was written by Obiel Kapoor. So if you know Obiel Kapoor, he was Adi Keshava. So Obiel Kapoor is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disciple, Prabhu's godbrother. So he did a study when he was in Vrindavan. He spent many years in Vrindavan. And he did a study of all the different Babaji's and different saints of Raj who are exhibiting a very high level of devotion, Raganuga. So yeah, I mean, you can, of course you can read it, yeah. How much you can follow it, I don't know. I mean, you know, many of them, the Brajabasis, they follow a path that, you know, for us is not the path, at least at this moment in our spiritual life. But you can take it, yeah, you can read it as some inspiration of, you know, wow, there are people who are experiencing such things. But Srila Prabhupada said you have to be careful. Even Jagannanda Pandit, Sanatana Goswami, is saying in Chaitanya Charitamrita, just go Vrindavan for a few days. Mm-hmm. Because if you too intimately associate with them, you won't be able to understand their mood of devotion. So for us, we're meditating on Srila Prabhupada in Vrindavan and his mood of devotion in Vrindavan. More than the Babaji's of Vrindavan and those who are on the Raganuga platform. But still, it can be for inspiration, you can. We enter Vrindavan through Prabhupada.
Mm. Once I was in Mayapur and I asked your Guru Maharaj for blessings to go to Vrindavan and then to the Mangalarati, and then he said for all of us Prabhupada created place in Vrindavan, don't worry. Mm. Each devotee in ISKCON has place in Vrindavan, Prabhupada created for each devotee, so you're safe with this Prabhupada, even if you're not qualified. He said like this once to me.
Prabhupada knows the best way for us to be situated in Vrindavan. Once I was on Govardhan Parikrama, and it was an amazing experience because I was by myself. I didn't have anything. I didn't have a phone. I just literally had a dhoti and my bead bag. That was it. I was just walking around Govardhan. And it was an interesting Parikrama. Every Parikrama has its taste. But in this one I felt so liberated. Like I just felt like, wow, this is so freedom. This is freedom. Like I'm just here. I didn't have nothing. Like I'm just free. And then at one point in the Parikrama, I stopped. This is just after Jatipur. If you know Govardhan Parikrama, then you come round. When you come round the tip of Govardhan, then you come to Jatipur. Jatipur is named that because that's the place of Madhavendra Puri, because he was Jatindra, he was the foremost of yatis or renunciates. So I walked just past there, and then one Babaji came to me. And so we were talking, and then he asked her, and I said, I'm going back to London. And then at that moment he said, "What? Just come and stay with me, just stay here." So he offered. He says, why do you want to go back there? You're here, you're in Govardhan. It's like this. And I was already on that parikrama. I was thinking, this is amazing. And then he told me that after. So in my mind, I was like, my God, this is a sign from Krishna. Maybe I should just stay here. He said, you can just stay here. He said, you can just, you know, disappear from the face of the world. And just, nija nikata nivasam, dehi govardhanatvam. He was preaching to me. Because Raghunath Das Goswami writes a song, and in the end of the song, every line he says, "Nija nikata nivasam dehi govardhanatvam," my cherished desire, that aspiration which is causing my heart to tremble, is that one day I may just simply take residence at the foothills of Govardhan. He was preaching to me. Here you go. You can just reside here for the rest of your life. You don't need to. So for a moment, I was thinking, maybe I should. And then I said, but what will I do here? I have no vision.
I have no qualification.
Prabhupada knows the way to situate us in Vrindavan, and he can't be premature. When I go to Vrindavan, it's like every morning we go to... So anyway, before I go to that, so then I told him, no. I said, one day, maybe. But right now I have to go back and I have to do my service. Because through that seva, we'll become qualified. But whenever I go to Vrindavan, it's like we go to Prabhupada's Samadhi, Arati, every morning. And it's so strange, like you arrive in Vrindavan and you're just like, wow, I'm here now, I can just read and chant. And after 3 days, I tell you, when we go to the Samadhi Arati, when I see Prabhupada, I just feel like Prabhupada's just telling me, like, okay, when are you going to leave?
Yeah.
When are you going to go? It's like, Prabhupada, I just got here, you know. Just let me be here for some time. But even straight after a few days, you start feeling Prabhupada saying, okay, yeah, all right, but when are you going to get back? You have to serve. You have to share. You have to give. Because the fire of that service is what's going to give you a real darshan of Vrindavan. So, if you try to do it prematurely, it will be very superficial. So therefore, yeah, Prabhupada made a place for all of us in Vrindavan. And unless you have some service in Vrindavan, you don't stay there too long. Get your inspiration. There's only three reasons to go Vrindavan. One is to get inspiration, one is if you have some service, and the other one is to die. There's no other reason to be in Vrindavan. It's one of those three. If you're not going to die, or we never know, but if you're not planning to die anytime soon, if you don't have any service there, then you're just going for inspiration. Inspiration means in, absorb yourself, and then come out. Yeah?
Yeah, my Guru Maharaj said in one of his classes, he said, you can't get crashing to Vrindavan, you have to go through Lord Chaitanya's mercy.
Yeah, Prabodhananda Saraswati says, Yatha Yatha Gaura Padada Vinde. He says, when you jump into the ocean of the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and you navigate yourself to the depths of Gaura Leela, then eventually when you come out and you emerge from the ocean of Gaura Leela, then you arrive on the banks of Raja where Radhika and Madhava will greet you. So the only entrance to Vrindavan is through Gauranga, Gaura Leela. Therefore, if you try to go to Vrindavan without Mahaprabhu's mercy, not possible. Not possible.
Is there anything you would recommend to do before we arrive in Vrindavan for someone going the first time? To prepare themselves?
When you're going tomorrow morning.
I've been staying in Mumbai for like a week or so.
Okay. Well, first thing you can do is read up on some of the places before you go, so that when you go there you can be in a deeper meditation. You know, some places in Vrindavan you will go. Goswami temples, Govardhan Parikrama. So try to, beautiful books here, you can read them before you go. Second thing I always do when I go Vrindavan is I make one prayer. One prayer which I feel encapsulates my hopes, my fears, my aspirations, what I want to ask Krishna for or thank Krishna for. And then what I do is when I'm in Vrindavan, at every single holy place that I go to, every single morning in front of the deities, I keep reciting that same prayer. So I find that that gives me a focus for the trip, you know, and you draw Vrindavan is Chintamani Dham, so it fulfills your desires. So that you can also do. And I think apart from that, make sure you're aware of the 10 offences to the Holy Dham. So you know, the 10 offences to the Holy Dham. So you should. This is described also that just as there's 10 offenses to the holy name, there's 10 offenses to the palm. So you should avoid those offenses. And then engage yourself while you're there. Maybe others can give their Srinivasprabhu Ananta Parama. What would be your advice to anyone going to the Dham?
Mahendra Prabhu said that you should do 10-hour kirtan when you're in Vrindavan. Mm-hmm. I mean, engage yourself, don't space out like you said.
Yeah. Basically do kirtan.
Do kirtan, parikram, extra chanting, reading.
Yeah, it's nice. When I used to go in January, my schedule was that I'd chant before Mangal Arati, good number of rounds, go for the Samadhi Arati, go for Mangal Arati, and then chant all the way through in Prabhupada's house till 7 o'clock. So already by, 7 o'clock you can have like 30 rounds, 25 rounds. And then what I would do is I'd go back and I'd learn shlokas in the room for 45 minutes. And then I'd come back for class. And then at 8, 9 o'clock, once class finishes, then I would go for Vrindavan Parikrama. And you can chant another 20, 25 rounds of Vrindavan Parikrama. Then you come back by midday, take lunch, take a little nap after, and then I would read for like 4 hours, 5 hours, and then I'd go for the kirtan, and then take rest. And just do the same thing every day. You can, if you engage yourself in Vrindavan, you can chant like 50 rounds every day, you can read 5 hours, be in a kirtan, and do a Vrindavan Parikrama. And learn verses. Learn 5 verses every day. And just do it day after day. I mean, you do something like that for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, it's like it has some impact.
It won't be like an overdose, right?
Yeah, I mean, you have to do what. Everyone is different, isn't it? So you have to do what works for you. So you find out. As I said, some people can't. They don't, sitting down for that many hours reading, it's not their thing. It doesn't make you a bad devotee. It's okay. But you find that you have to find a way to be engaged. But do some service. Some devotees used to just go and clean Radha Kund. You just take a broom. Nice. Just go and just sweep. Can do it. Why not? Any advice on Vrindavan?
I just chant a lot else. The last time I went in 3 days ago, after we did this deity worship course in my process, I said, let me go for 10 days before I go back here. 1 week I was there. So I went to Vrindavan and I only went to three places actually. Two places actually. I only went to three places every day. I went to Gopeshwar Mahadev, to Radha Damoda, and to Krishna Balaram temple, and then just to the room. And that's it. I'll just chant all day and just read and take the prasadam, and that's 1 week like this. This is how I did. Just chanting my rounds and praying for mercy really. So
you don't need to go to so many places. Prabhupada said, I've invited all the holy places into the four walls of the Krishna Balaram temple. You don't need to go anywhere. But you need to intensify your bhajan. You see, when devotees go to Vrindavan, when they're doing Vrindavan Parikrama, every Parikrama has a traditional place to start. We just start wherever it's convenient, and then we just do a circle. So like for example, in Govardhan Parikrama, we just start where the taxi arrives at Govardhan. But actually, the real place to start is in Manasi Ganga, right? Yeah. That's where you start the Parikrama, if you're really doing it. Haridev at Haridev Temple. So do you know the place where you start in Vrindavan, the Parikrama? You start Madan Mohan. And it has two reasons why you start a Vrindavan Parikrama at Madan Mohan. The first reason is because Madan Mohan is the Sambandha deity. And we pray to Madan Mohan that Madan Mohan is Krishna who is enchanting Cupid. So we say that Krishna, in these days that I'm in the dham, please protect me from lust. Please protect me from the onslaught of the lusty desires and attachments so that I can engage myself fully, heart and mind. But there's another reason why you begin at Madan Mohan, because Madan Mohan is situated on Dvadasaditya Til, which means the hill of 12 suns. Why is it the hill of 12 suns? Because just before you have Kaliyagat. And from there, Krishna jumped into Yamuna. And why did Krishna jump into Yamuna? Because he wanted to chastise Kaliya. And when Krishna chastised Kaliya and he came out, then he landed on this hill. And Krishna was wet and he was shivering. And so when he was shivering, what happened is that Surya Dev expanded into 12 suns to heat up Krishna's body. Therefore, that hill is known as Dvadasaditya Hill, the hill of 12 suns. But it's said that the pilgrims go to that hill because what they're praying is that may my bhajan become 12 times more intense while I'm here in Vrindavan. So that is the intention of a sadhaka who goes to Vrindavan, that let my bhajan become 12 times more intense. So you have to try to intensify it. You see, Vrindavan's a good opportunity to try and break through in a deeper level of bhajan. Break through in chanting a little bit. Break through in reading. Break through in a deeper meditation. In Vrindavan you can make some breakthroughs because there's a great mercy that's available there. And then when you come out, you're not the same person because you've got, Krishna's introduced you to another level. But you have to put in some effort. And do Bhishma Panchaka in Vrindavan, traditional style. Last 5 days, just the 5 products of the cow, 1 day, each item. Right? 1 day cow urine, 1 day dung, 1 day milk, 1 day ghee. And 1 day yogurt.
I think I'll just do more chanting. That is what my goes therapy.
Bhakti Devadamana Maharaj in Vrindavan, oh my god, also austere. For the Bhishma Panchaka, complete fast.
Really?
Wow. 5 days.
Fast.
Complete.
There was one devotee who's going to do that in Mayapur, just complete fast. And Jaya Prataka Swami says, this is more ignorance. You can't do that.
Everyone has their own. But the principle is there. According, you have to understand your level, but you have to make an effort. You have to try. Get the mercy. Good luck. Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Vrindavan Dham ki jai, Paramchaya Ashram ki
jai,
Jai.